Soul Talk is a podcast dedicated to making space for Latinx storytellers and content creators across all media to chat about their art, experiences, and culture. As a branch of the Soul Project, Soul Talk welcomes you to the Green Room.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Soul Talk. My name is Joey Reyes. My pronouns are they, them, theirs. And I'm the associate producer here at the Soul Project. And of course, I'm joined here with...
Hi, my name is David Mendizabal. I use he, him pronouns for now. And I am the associate artistic director of the Soul Project.
I love that, for now. Yes, it's a journey.
It is a journey.
And we welcome everyone to participate. Thank you all so much for tuning in with us. This is our episode that is airing right before this momentous election. And we thought it would be great to be joined today by the creators of a virtual Zoom experience called Carlos Quince. It is an immersive virtual experience that invites audiences to become guests at Carla's Zoom Quinceañera, with the aim of increasing Latinx participation in the United States electoral process. This nonpartisan English-Spanish extravaganza will inform on the voting process, break down some of the issues at stake this election year, and provide space for individuals to reflect on how their voting choices affect their communities. Today with us, we have two of the collaborators on the project, Estefania Fadul and Galia Bacall, the director and associate director. Estefania is a Colombian-American stage director, primarily focusing on new plays and musicals. She's developed and directed work off-Broadway, regionally, and internationally at the Public Theater, INTAR, Juilliard, Playwrights Realm, Long Wharf Theater, Repertorio Español, and others. She's an alumna of the O'Neill National Directors Fellowship, Fuller Fellowship at the Williamstown Theater Festival, Drama League Directors Project's Fall Fellowship and TV Fellowship, the Van Leer Fellowship at Repertorio Español, and NALAC Leadership Institute. She's also a member of the New George's Jam, Latinx Theater Commons Steering Committee, and Lincoln Center Directors Lab and SDC. And she received her BA from Vassar College.
Yes, yes. And Galia Bacall, who is the associate director for Carlos Quince, is a director. She is part of the 2020-2021 Roundabout Directors Group cohort, a member of the Civilians 2020-21 R&D group. She's worked with us at the Soul Project, with the Drama League, Samuel French, Atlantic Theater Company, the Broadway League, Theater for a New Audience, The Tank, and LaGuardia Performing Arts Center. Recent productions include new works by Alicia Espinosa with Teatro Latea, and a new work with Beto O'Byrne, and that we're developing here with the Soul Project. We're so excited to be chatting with the both of them and to get to know more about the process of creating this piece and the importance, I think, of voting.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you joined us earlier this summer for the virtual Soul Fest, Carlos Quince was a part of that. You might have already gotten a taste of the show. They have officially stopped performances now that we're like really in the final stretch here of the election. We're going to have a really in-depth conversation today about how the project came about, you know, what inspired them to even create it in the first place, the shifting and the challenges that they faced in having to go from initially the intention of it being an in-person performance to then having to shift into the virtual space, and overall the importance of educating voters and encouraging people to get out to vote. Have you already, what's your plan, David? What is, please share with the audience.
Yes, I will be voting in person here in New York. My partner and I have both decided we are going to vote in person on November 3rd. So we have some work to do between now and then to really educate ourselves on the ballot. You know, obviously there's the presidential election, but there are other elections, other elections that are happening at the same time, and things to educate ourselves and inform ourselves so that we can vote, you know, in line with our values.
Right. Be informed. Absolutely. And also encourage people to participate in mail-in voting, which is what I ended up doing earlier this month. That is our premise for today. That's good. You're going to be hearing that a lot from us today because it's important.
It is.
It is an important piece of our democracy that a lot of people will be participating in very soon. So we want to make sure that we're encouraging people to, you know, be informed and do what they got to do.
Yeah.
But before we dive all in, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I think the anxiety of the oncoming election and the everyday adventures of living in this country right now are slowly catching up, but finding ways to practice self-care, practice, you know, centering myself, not allowing myself to get too overwhelmed by everything that's going on. And really, you know, I was so excited to be able to engage with Carlos Quince and to see it, because I think it really helped remind me that this process can be fun. There can be joy. There is joy in educating yourself and centering liberation in this process. And so, you know, not allowing myself to get drowned in some of the noise.
Yes, I think it's really important to find joy, as you say, in even the smallest pockets of the world. Great. So thank you all so much for listening, and we will be right back with Estefania and Galia. Stay tuned. Hello, Estefania and Galia. Welcome. How are you today?
Thank you. We're good.
Doing great.
We're so excited that you're here to chat with us for Soul Talk, and to be able just to shine a light and spotlight the work that y'all did with Carlos Quince, which was such a beautiful, I have to say, just such a beautiful and really exciting, probably one of the most exciting pieces of Zoom theater that that I've experienced in this time. And just like a real, I feel like you just utilized all of the elements of Zoom in such a really interactive way. It was one of the first times I felt very a part of a community instead of just watching like a Zoom reading, you know? So just bravo, bravo to y'all and the rest of the team for a really exciting piece of theater.
Thank you. Yeah. It's good to hear.
It was gorgeous. Before we start diving into all of that, I just want to start us off by asking how you're doing, like checking in with you. What is your current self-care practice? I feel like people have developed some and they've changed over the last 7 months now. So I just want to see where you're at right now.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny because I feel like in a way, like this process was self-care in a way, like going through it with this because of the people and like having that continuous community. But now it's mostly over. And I'm actually finding that hanging out with my friend's puppy has become one of my favorite things in this pandemic. Aww.
Cutest puppy.
What kind of puppy?
She's a little 6-month-old Frenchie.
Oh, so cute. So cute. I think I saw pictures of y'all at a like apple orchard or something, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. So like Rosie, the puppy. I know I send Galia photos all the time. I'm like, this is what I'm doing today.
Aw. It's like auntie duty too. You get to like you know, all of the perks, none of the pitfalls, you know.
Exactly.
You're like, I don't have to walk it.
Exactly. I don't have to get up at 7 a.m. to like to deal with it. Yeah.
Totally. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same wavelength of the project, because it's also been nice to see the same group of people, like from the first day of quarantine to now. Like it's been like this check-in of like, how are you doing today? And we know what we did last week. So that was comforting, and I'm missing it a little. So I think my check-in, there's a coffee shop that opened like right before the pandemic. So these poor people opened like a week before and they had to shut down, and they just reopened, and it's owned by this like lovely woman who like just makes new pastries every day, whatever comes to mind. So it's just been like my little self-care to like every day I get to walk over and be like, what'd you make today? Like today she had a cinnamon bun ready for me. And I was like, wow, that little thing meant so much.
Thank you so much for checking in. I'm so curious to kick us off. Like how did this project come about? Who were the people that said, let's do this? I know we're chatting here with the director and the associate director of the project. You just mentioned your group of collaborators who were all amazing in this project. How did this come about? What was the inspiration?
Yeah, and the timeline, because I know that y'all were also working on it way before the quarantine. So would love to hear about that.
Yeah, so we've been like officially working on it, I guess, since late 2018.
Oh, wow.
In terms of like actually like getting into room and, you know, creating some output. I think even before that, I think to be honest, like in the last election, when I was text banking one day in the run up to the election, they gave me like a stack of names to text, and it was voters in Florida, a lot of, you know, Latinx sounding, whatever that means, last names. I was surprised by the reaction to the text. I think that I kind of went in assuming that, you know, being presumably a lot of Latinx voters, they might be leaning in one direction because of one of the candidates, you know, having very negative things to say about Latinx people. And I think I was like very surprised to get very opposite responses from some of the voters. And that kind of honestly just started, it was fascinating for me. I was just curious about that and wanted to explore that more. And I also, the next year, actually had a residency at the Drama League to investigate like the seeds of a project. It was a short residency to just kind of try stuff out. And I knew that I really wanted to do something relating to Latinx identity and also to work in an ensemble way, which is something that I love and hadn't been able to do really since college in like a very deep way. And so basically asked some collaborators to join me at the Drama League. And at that point, it was literally three of us. And we were just kind of brainstorming ideas. And then over the course of it, I basically had like, I have like notebooks of just like, you know, scribbles, but also like people that had been writing down, like who I would like love to be part of this. Galia being like one of, you know, the first people I thought of because we've been working on stuff together since I think like probably 2016, if not before. And I just love Galia and would want to do everything with Galia. And so through that, like with Galia and a bunch of our other collaborators who are, you know, people who I loved and wanted to work with, and Galia also bringing some of her people that she knew in who I didn't, it kind of started growing from there. The kind of theater that I'm interested in is theater that I think also has some sort of action component. And I think that often theater talks a lot about the change it can have, and often it doesn't actually get to that part of it. Sometimes it feels like it kind of ends a little too soon. And I think that it was really important from the beginning for this to not just be an exploration of like why maybe certain Latinx voters were voting certain ways, but also using it as an opportunity to have some real action in the run-up to this next election and to have those conversations with undecided voters and really explore the kind of like what's behind our choices in voting, and in particular, how that intersects with Latinx identity, which I think is, you know, it's obviously a big topic. You know, very lucky to have all these like amazing people who then like jumped on board over the course of it. And I think in 2018, we really started working on it more concretely, and it developed, you know, we had nothing at the beginning. So it's really developed from the work and conversations that we were doing with this group of humans who are amazing artists and just really thoughtful and intentional. And yeah, so it went from there.
Amazing. And Galia, how did you become involved and what was, you know, what was that collaboration starting to look like?
Yeah, I mean, I'll do anything if Tiffany asks me. That's pretty much a relationship at this point. But it came up in another rehearsal that we were working on a show. And I think we were just talking about our families and how confused we were about their takes on things. And somebody just brought this up to me and she was like, would you be down to do it? Are you interested in devised ensemble work? And that's actually where the base of my directing comes from. I started in devised ensemble work. I hadn't touched in a while. So I was excited to go back into it, especially with Latinx artists. Also just getting to be in a room of just Latinx artists is such a privilege, and it's so rare that was so exciting for me, no matter the topic. So I came on board as the assistant director, as a collaborators, we all did, because I think what I love about our ensemble is that we're all such equal collaborators. Everyone is writing, everyone is doing all the exercises. I mean, Stephanie and I would act and we would write and we push everyone, because you're like, if we're pushing you outside your comfort zone, we'll be pushing ourselves outside our comfort zone. So that was how I got involved. And I think it was so interesting watching the process develop. I mean, starting off in this place of like, we just want to talk about this and we don't know what that means, to, well, we did all this research and we started doing interviews and bringing in articles and finding the topics that interested us, to evolving. I don't even know what was the moment where we landed on the quince, but there was just like, as an ensemble, crystallizing moment where we're going to do the quince. And as Avid mentioned, it was before the pandemic. So we actually were going to do this immersive in-person quince. We had bands lined up. We had caterers and restaurants lined up. It was this full production. And then watching that do a full 180 into a virtual world and seeing how we could do it, which I think we don't like to say that it's not a benefit of the pandemic, because that's horrible to say, but I think it's finding the silver lining of the pandemic, right? And the virtual world actually helped us have more access to more people, have a more personal experience. Yeah. We don't know if we would have had it in the room. I think it's something we still want to explore maybe one day after the pandemic is far behind us, but it was such a different journey that it took us on.
Yeah, no, I love that you talk about that, just in the sense of like this idea of this fully immersive experience, because as I was saying, like, you felt that, like, in a way it feels like, and I'm curious, you know, I'm sure we'll talk more about that process of adapting from something that was live in person to the Zoom experience, but it felt like such an organic medium for the conversation that you were wanting to have with folks, for the kind of environment that you could create, and still feeling like you were at someone's quince, like you were at this party, but you were also really learning a lot about voting, learning a lot about Latinx identity, learning a lot about this very beautiful family. Like, it was still rooted in like a family story and the characters and their stories. And so, yeah, I love how, I'm sure there were many sacrifices, as you say, but it, you know, in hearing it and in experiencing it, it feels like that, you know, as you say, it's an immersive experience to mobilize the Latinx vote. I feel like that mission you didn't sacrifice that mission in that organic adaptation.
Well, it's great to hear that from an audience perspective, that was felt, because I know it's something we worked really hard on, mainly because as Galia said, like, even from the beginning of our conversations, one of the things that was super important to the group was that this was a piece that was focused on that community aspect while also being artistically rigorous and surprising to us as artists as well. Like, things. And so even from the beginning, when it was still a live experience, it was important to us that the audience could automatically feel comfortable and feel like they were, you know, with people they knew before getting into potentially more difficult discussions.
Yeah.
And so we were going to actually tour it to Florida originally. And the idea was that it would, we would go to like community centers and, I don't know, church basements or parking lots, you know, anywhere that would have us. And that it would, yeah, like Galia said, start off with like this community dinner with live music, with all these elements. And I think that although that part of it, we obviously, you know, we weren't able to do a live dinner with everyone, I think that in terms of the kind of gains from the virtual format for this the particular mission of this piece, I actually think like it worked out mainly in that we were able to reach more audiences. So we were able to go to, you know, quote unquote, go to Texas virtually, go to Georgia, go to Oregon, you know, and so that was exciting. Whereas like otherwise it might have been like 5 performances in Florida based on like our limited funding, you know?
I saw the show in Oregon, quote unquote, in Portland, you know, with Boom Arts. I think added to the experience of watching it was being there with people, you know, living in New York, we're in such a bubble. And I remember the PTSD from the last election and really feeling like, in my mind, I was like, there is no way this could happen. Like, I'm paying attention to the rest of the world. And it's a sort of ignorance is bliss type reality that I think I was living in. And so to be able to have this experience in this election with folks on the other side of the world with completely different values and a completely different lifestyle, and to have an experience that did create a safe space to engage in difficult conversations that are also like what I recognize and what came up in the play, you know, there are conversations that are hard to have even in your own families, even amongst the people that you know, even in your own communities, these conversations around politics, around voting, you know, and I started thinking back to my own family and being like, my dad was an immigrant, and you know, I'm first generation. This family, obviously, in so many ways, rooted in politics in a lot of ways, and yet we really didn't talk about politics that much. You know, like our lives were inherently political, but that idea of talking about politics, talking about voting, talking about, you know, your sort of rights as a voter, you know, it's something that I was like, in retrospect, I was like watching it and going like, oh yeah, you know, we don't do this even in the safety of our own communities. And so to be able to do it with a community that, like, I was like, I would never be in a theater with so many of you. And to be able to do that in this, I just thought was a real treat and expanded even my understanding of what's happening right now in this election. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think what was really beautiful too is that I know that it was meant to be all in person, but the way that you adapted it to be this in this virtual space felt so seamless, and there was no like hiding that either. It, you know, you took the pandemic and inserted it as part of the story and acknowledged it. So it wasn't us just watching people, you know, read a play on the screen. It was like, it was immediately connecting with the audience and being like, oh, we're all in this together and experiencing this together at the same time. Like, this is the reality that we're dealing with. And it added this extra layer to it being an election year, given that we're also in this global pandemic, and this like nuance that was captured so effortlessly, I felt, and so beautifully.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, thank you. It's, you know, I think that one of the first things we talked about when the pandemic hit and we were discussing making it virtual was that, you know, there's realities of the world that we're living in, which are also actually very closely tied to voting in this election in terms of just like what's going on in the world and specifically in this country. It felt important to acknowledge, both because it's an important conversation as part of the voting conversation. And I think also in that, in creating a space that is a party space, because we're entering this quinceañera, that it felt a little icky to not acknowledge these like also like parallel awful things that are happening in the world, right? And so it actually became, and it was something that was very much voiced within the ensemble as we were having these discussions, and it actually kind of mirrors Carla's journey.
Yeah.
In even like in the play, deciding to have this quinceañera, even though the pandemic is happening.
I want to talk about how you're saying you were surprised at how Latinx voters vote, you know, and I think after, obviously, you know, in this election, after the initial presidential debate, you know, I was shocked when I saw, you know, I think it was like Univision or Telemundo had done a poll. And obviously, you know, these polls are not extensive, you know, but it was like 66% of the voters that they polled who are Latinx identifying people thought that the current administration did a great job. And you're sort of like, oh, wow, like we are such a huge part of the population. And yet there is, and we have often spoken about this, you know, there's this myth of the monolith, you know, and it's not, we don't all see the same way. We don't all have the same political views. We are not all of the same race. We are not all, we do not have same relationships to immigration. We don't have, you know, so it's like on all of these topics that in my mind, I'm like, oh, we all see eye to eye on this, right? I'm like, no, we don't. There isn't that reality. And so like, yeah, I totally understand that moment of realizing this surprising, you know, I'm from Florida too. Puerto Rican, Ecuadorian household. I grew up in Orlando and I'm just like, oh, Florida. You know, but like Orlando is also very different, and the Puerto Ricans Orlando are also very different than like the Cubans in Miami, you know? And so you're just sort of like looking at that going, there's so much more nuance. And what I thought was exciting was you even found a way to capture that in the story. And I don't want to give any spoilers away, but I also want to talk about a moment that I just was really moved in one of the breakout rooms that I had. I want to say Miguel is her friend, right? The character. Yeah, there was a moment, you know, where he's struggling with something very personally that's happening in his family that doesn't necessarily directly affect Carla's family, do you know, or they kind of are, you know, and dealing with immigration. And it was this interesting moment where it was like, it wasn't a part of this family's reality. And yet in my mind, I'm like, well, we should all think about it. And there was that moment of intersection where it was like, even within our own communities, we are not aware of what the people in our community are actually dealing with. And I just thought that was such a powerful moment. And in such a piece that was a celebration, I love that you found that balance of celebration and joy and also these real deep political issues. Yeah. And I'm curious, you know, how those conversations were about finding, you know, you've talked about like, yes, we are at a party, but how was that in the collaborative process of really sort of going, what are the issues that we want to tackle head on? And how do we sort of weave them into this story?
I think it came from two places. One was from the research side of things, when we were just kind of bringing in articles, bringing things that popped out to us. A lot of the, or actually I think every storyline came from an article we read or a person we interviewed that inspired that story. And what we started noticing is there were certain themes that kept coming up, that kept being the most talked about, the most that either swayed voters or specifically affected the Latinx community. So that was on one side of it. And then on the other side, we had our actual Latinx experiences, the ensemble's experiences of having those conversations. What are those points that other people tend to bring up? What are those points of conflict? And the reality of then setting that in a party, I think there was a moment we all realized where I was like, I don't know, have you ever been to a Latinx party where something didn't go down or the chisme wasn't in the air? And like, that is the reality of our experience. And I think that was something I was like, oh, that's, we can all relate to that moment where like, you know, you hear that tia screaming in the corner about that, or like the other one has too much mezcal. And like, you know, we're having this real in-person experience. And we were like, okay, so if these moments are real and we've had them all in regards to politics, how do we tie them together? How does that affect your current situation? So with, I mean, Miguel specifically, he's on, you know, he's, like you said, living a very different experience than the other families or other people in the room, but it's affecting his timeline at this exact present moment. And it's affecting how he's thinking and how he's dealing. And so it was interesting kind of talking to the actors, talking to the ensemble of how do we tie this in? What are the stressors? What are the things that push this party forward while still making sure the ensemble wants to be at the party? That I think that's something Stephanie and I talked about a lot of, like, okay, we just found out this very heavy thing. How does the audience feel like they can still have a dance party afterwards? How does this kind of like settle in the space?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's interesting because even the kind of idea for having multiple storylines happening at the same time, which was going to be in the live version, but I think actually just made it much easier to achieve with breakout rooms on Zoom. In kind of figuring out these three topics, a big part of it was also that, precisely what you were saying, as Latinx people, we are not a monolith, and issues that we might assume affect, quote unquote, the Latinx community often only affect a subset of the Latinx community based on, you know, a million factors. And it became a big thing for us, which was like, if there was a way for people to just connect more personally to some of these issues that maybe actually don't affect some of them, that might then, you know, if they get to know this character and get to know and care about this character, these are actually stories that are happening to people in real life. And therefore, hopefully there's a sense of responsibility towards and accountability towards your community in that way. And so, you know, in kind of determining, we had climate change, healthcare, and immigration as the three topics, which actually, because we ended up partnering with Voto Latino, which is a national organization to get out the Latinx vote, in order to have like our registration link and all of that, they actually told us, once mm-hmm. we decided on these topics, just from our conversations and research, that those are their three top topics as well, which I thought was interesting in terms of, you know, just the way that these topics are kind of rising to the top within, quote unquote, the Latinx community on a larger level. And I think just the fact that, you know, it was interesting as we kind of toured the country, we would always ask in our pre-show questionnaire, which of these topics do you care about the most? And that's how we would put people into groups. And that was based on the idea that if you're an undecided voter or you're not quite sure if voting applies to you, but you know that maybe you care about this topic a little bit more, and then you see a story about that topic, you might be that much more inclined to then go do something about it at the polls. And also with the thought that if we broke people up into breakout groups, back to, again, exactly what you were saying, David, sometimes it's actually harder to have these conversations with people you're close with.
Yeah.
And so in actually being kind of broken up and getting to know people and getting comfortable with people that maybe you don't know, you might actually be able to talk more about it. And then hopefully you weren't in the same breakout group as your friend who came with you. And then when you guys leave, you can like talk about it together. And maybe like that continues the conversation and has it have more of like a ripple effect after the show as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that was like also part of the thinking behind some of these stories.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I love that, because, you know, my partner came and he was in the living room and I was in the office and he was in a different breakout room. And then I came with a crew and I had another friend who is in Los Angeles who was in the third breakout room. And we all sort of checked in with each other and it was like, what happened in your room? What happened in your room? What happened in your room? And there was something about that that also really gave me that feeling of being in the theater of like, I want to talk about this afterwards. And I think, you know, I've seen so many memes and so many posts, you know, in this moment in time about like the loss of theater right now. And I think it's that conversation, it's that like leaving the theater and like wanting to talk to someone about what their experience is and realizing that, yes, you know, like in Zoom readings, like we have the chats and, you know, you can talk about things sort of in a chat, but you lose that human to human perspective. And so I loved that. Like it really made it exciting. And the whole night, you know, my partner and I were just like talking about what happened in our individual rooms and the different storylines and the conversations that we got to experience also just from the other people who were there that we got to listen to and be like, oh, I never thought about it from that perspective, you know? So I think, yeah, bravo. That was I think that really was such a successful choice that y'all made.
I love that. It's definitely the after theater drinks that we're missing, right? It's such a big part. It was a part of the experience of going to the theater. And I think, you know, it goes back to your point, Bevita, we all vote for different reasons. And something we really noticed was that a lot of voters in general are very one issue voters. And so how that helped us also is like, okay, if they do only care about this, like Estefania said, we're putting context in it. But at the same time, now they're being forced to think about how those issues actually ripple and affect all the other issues and making them think, okay, I'm voting for this candidate because I agree with this one issue, but now I'm realizing there are these other things that actually disagree with this candidate. So like, what is my actual best choice? And I think that's also what led us to really focus and stress local elections and like how much that directly affects you, how much we have to like, it's a lot of research, but it actually is what is going to push your voice into the national scale.
I think what's another brilliant piece of what you're sharing too is that you're asking the attendees of the event to self-reflect, to have this self-awareness, as you just mentioned, you know, how local elections affect their beings, how policies, and to really, really take into consideration how policy and law is crafted to suppress and oppress people. And maybe even if something is to an advantage for you, it can end up being oppressive to another person. Looking at the show's website, there is a clear value listed of anti-racism. And I was just wondering, like, how did that start to factor into your conversations over the last few months, especially with all of the civic unrest that's going on and the power behind like calling people to action? You know, we're in the last few days here with the election coming up so soon. You know, we're asking people to make sure that they have a plan and to start to really self-reflect on that awareness. To go back to my question, like how did the conversation around anti-racism start to factor into the creation of this in the virtual world?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually, so it's been part of the conversation from the very beginning, from the moment we got into a room and, you know, in 2018, that was part of the conversation. I think because it's also not only just a necessary conversation in the world, but I think is directly related to voting choices, in my opinion. And I think that in thinking about the Latinx community and precisely kind of what we were discussing of like, there are so many races, backgrounds, and ethnicities, cultures, languages, everything, you know, within that one label that's kind of thrown on everyone in this country who is of the Latin American diaspora. Even in thinking about why someone, I mean, really kind of goes back to that like text banking in a way that like that surprise of like, oh, wow, like someone who is Latinx might actually be voting for this thing because it benefits them for whatever reason, but it's actually very oppressive to a lot of other people within the Latinx community. And I think for us in kind of unpacking that and doing a lot of research and interviews, like Galia said, realizing that the racism that is ingrained in the Latinx community was so much a part of that, even if it's, you know, unconscious. For example, like a white Latinx voter in Florida might have very different kind of priority issues than an Afro-Latino voter in, I don't know, some other part of the country, right? And so for us, it just became a necessary part of the conversation as to like why people vote the way they do and why, you know, just thinking about how we can kind of start seeing beyond ourselves and thinking of who else is in our community that may not be exactly like me, and what are those needs and what are those ways that they might be oppressed and ways that I'm not, and vice versa, and how can we look out for each other and actually work from a policy perspective, even just to make sure that everyone is taken care of and their rights are taken care of.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I think, you know, I think especially in this election and in this moment in time where the reckoning that this country and all of us are having to individually have with racism and white supremacy is at the center of the conversation. And I can say, you know, as a non-Black Latinx person, mm-hmm. and conversations that I've had with non-Black Latinx people, you know, often we can excuse ourselves from this very, what seems like a Black and white issue. It feels not necessarily a part of our existence, do you know? And that in itself, that excusing from that conversation is in itself anti-Black. It's racist. It's a racist act, you know? And so it is about how can we look both beyond ourselves and also inside of ourselves among our own community and see that these conversations, it's not just a Black and white issue outside of us. It's a Black and white issue even inside of our own community. You know, we have Black family members, we have Black neighbors, we have Black people in the Latinx community, a lot of them that are so underrepresented. And I think that conversation of, yeah, how do we begin to really see ourselves, and sometimes seeing yourself and locating yourself inside of that conversation actually is a reckoning in which you have to locate yourself on maybe the wrong side and realize you've been on the wrong side of this conversation. And you're like, oh, but I'm not a part of it. We are all, and I love that. Like, we are all, you know, Latinx people, like we are all a part of this conversation. So step up, get involved, get inside, you know, locate yourself and start to dismantle those ingrained biases, you know? So I love that commitment, that value is a part of this work because it's so important. And I think so often it's an overlooked value in a lot of our work.
I think it's also like what you're saying, Debbie, of within the Latinx community at large, I feel like there's often a discomfort with talking about these things precisely because, yeah, people think it might not apply to them. And I think, you know, like thinking about some of the people that I know who, you know, because of skin color, because of class, because of whatever, you know, have certain privileges that other people do not, that then affects the way they vote when they're trying to like hold their own self-interest at heart.
Yeah.
And I think that, yeah, it feels like even like getting to that place of discomfort in that conversation in terms of like, how are we complicit in this is just key to even getting to a point where people are actually voting in ways that they're thinking about the community at large.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that rings true to the quote of, you know, it's not enough to just not be racist. You have to be actively anti-racist in your practice. So I know that the project has sort of wrapped for the time being. What is your vision for the future of this? You know, whether it remains in the virtual space. I know we just got the news about Broadway remaining closed until the summer of 2021. So like at this point, it's so unpredictable about when people can start to gather and enjoy theater in closed spaces again. But I'm curious, there's an election every year, right? Like this is obviously the one that people are really like paying attention to, but there's an election that happens every year. So I'm curious to know what your vision is for the future of this style of project.
I mean, something we really tried to do with this project is we weren't trying to make a theater show on Zoom. We were trying to make a Zoom theater show. And I think there's a fine line for us of that in the sense of we're not forcing theater practices into something that like, at least for us, we felt we couldn't honestly do. We were trying to recreate what is theater for the present day, for what may be the foreseeable future. And I think what's lovely about that is we've created this structure of a show that is kind of interchangeable. And, you know, we did these three scenes and we came to a point where like, oh, but these three scenes can be any scenes, you know, we could, someone could adapt this. I mean, in a perfect world, we talk about like, what if a school, a university one day takes the show and they, their students write their own scenes based on their own families and the topics that they're interested in, because these topics will continue to change and grow and evolve. I mean, just since we started doing this virtually, the healthcare scene took on a whole new form with COVID, right? I mean, that's a whole other conversation now. And I'm sure, you know, climate change will evolve, everything will change. So in a perfect world, or not even perfect, I think in the future, we will see this show being utilized as a structure for teaching, as a structure for getting people to vote. Like you said, there's always an election. I mean, we saw in the last midterm, that's the election that had the most women ever put into Congress. And that was an important election for us, just as much as this one would be. So I think continuing to use it, continuing to speak, and even past, you know, we made this show to get Latinx voters to the polls. But I think you both have touched upon this, that the show also teaches us how we have to have these conversations with our families. We have to sit there and we have to, it's such a, at least like, you know, in my Latinx experience, it's very like, no hablas de eso. It's like, you know, it's not the place for that. We keep it under the rug. That's not, you know, social politeness or whatever. And I think for me, it taught me like, oh, I have to force my family to talk about politics, whether or not it makes them uncomfortable. We have to talk about all these issues constantly so that when an election does come, it doesn't feel like a surprise. It doesn't feel like a chore that we have to do all these research. It's just embedded in our actual everyday life.
Right. I think the other side of that coin that you mentioned about like not talking about it is choosing to not participate in it. I know in my family, there are people, and this is an experience I had when watching Carlos Quince towards the end when we're having the communal conversation about if we believe our vote matters. I know that I have family members, close family members who choose not to participate because they feel like it isn't something that really matters. As you said, it's a very difficult conversation, and I would hope that people continue to encourage others to participate in our democracy because it's really important. And I think that it's, you know, it's the idea that your vote doesn't matter, I think is something that white supremacy relies on. Maybe it's an ideology that it has embedded into the minds of Black and Brown people to allow itself to maintain its power.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and I think like you were saying, yeah, you know, Christmas dinner is after the election, but I know every Christmas dinner in my family is the one that I'm just like, oh Lord, what's gonna happen? Do you know? And oftentimes it is, and I don't know the name of the actress who played Carla.
Camila Perez Santiago.
Camila, oh, she was fantastic. I mean, she was so full of heart and so full of vulnerability. And I think showed that it's not easy to check your abuela. It's not easy to call out, you know, Titi, you know, cualquiera, you know, and be like, Titi, no, do you know? But you can, and it's important, you have to do it, you know, and it's not, and I think I love the point that you said, Galia, about yes, the election, there's an election that happens every year, but if you make it a practice to be having these conversations on the regular with your family, then it doesn't feel so weighted. It doesn't feel like, so like, this is the one shot that I have to like have this conversation with my family and course correct, you know, decades of internalized colonization and, you know, oppression. You know, it's like, it's not gonna change overnight. And I think, you know, luckily for Carla, you know, a lot does change, but I think more than that, what I loved was, it was the acknowledgement from the family that this is not going to be easy, but that this is the beginning of a lifelong journey of just talking about things, you know? So it's like, yeah, there's no better time to start than now. And I think also, you know, what Carla shows is you got to first have these conversations with yourself. You got to first know where you stand on these issues, where your values are, where you're located in this work. And that really helps, you know, you can't check other people if you can't check yourself first. And I just thought that was such a beautiful narrative that really, really stuck with me coming out of this.
Yeah, and I feel like that it's exactly like that focus on community of like kind of realizing that like even just voting in support of someone else, what they need is also ultimately benefiting all of us, right? It's and I think that, you know, it's interesting because I feel like one of the things that in terms of like the kind of educational aspect of the project, it feels like so much of it is just that internal examination, looking in kind of like, where are my values? What do I believe in? And I think also a huge barrier to Latinx people voting is like voter education, which is actually something that like we, even within our own ensemble, when we sat down to have these conversations at the beginning, we realized that like, we don't know like a ton of things in terms of just like the logistics of voting and how it works and what your vote does in some cases and all of, and that all the other like little elections and all that. And I think that in researching more about that, it just became clear that it's not that the desire to vote is not there in Latinx communities. It's just that for various reasons, be it that like we've been systemically oppressed and it's like in the best interest of some groups not to have us vote, or be it that like we actually just are not aware of, and this is not just Latinx, this is just like I think people growing up in the US in particular, where we're not really taught about civic duty and civic engagement in this way necessarily in our schools.
Yeah.
Just like, how do you vote? Like, what do you need? Like, what's, you know, all that stuff. And so I think that for us, just having that educational component in a way that doesn't feel like, we definitely didn't want it to feel or actually be like it's like us coming in to educate you on how you vote.
Yeah.
But that it's like very much part of the experience, but also that audiences have those conversations with each other was a really key part for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that you note on the website too, that the experience is nonpartisan. I think it's important to say that too, that this is really trying to get at the root of educating people, because knowledge is power, you know, and the more you know, and about like the, what it means for you to participate in our democracy, the more emboldened and more empowered you feel to be able to make that well-informed decision, you know, whether for yourself or for others. I mean, I think it's important, like you even said it too, like the power of community and the idea that like, you know, the vote isn't just affecting me now. It's also something that will trickle down, you know, seven generations ahead of me, right? Those are the things that I think are really important to bring into the light here.
Yeah,
because I think we realized, sorry, God.
Go for it. Oh.
No, I think we realized even our answer to the last election and our answer to, you know, why people are voting where they are, it does boil down to education on both sides, right? You have people that when they get their citizenship, they have to take a test where they have to answer the 13 colonies, but they don't have to answer how a bill gets passed, right? Or like in our own education, government is an elective that you take in high school for most of us. And that was such an interesting realizations for us of when, you know, we sat down with a friend of mine who's a lawyer and he was on the Hillary campaign. And we sat there for 4 hours just going over how a bill was made, because all of us had no idea the actual steps and all the issues and all the, you know, everything that goes into that process, which is a very basic process of the government that we should really know. And I think that's when we realized, oh, people just don't know. People don't know what the Electoral College does. They don't know what their vote does. And that was, you know, part of the question. A lot of people would be like, oh, I'm not going to vote because like it's the Electoral College anyways, but that's not true. And so I think, you were just, Stephanie, was saying educating without feeling like you're being educated was such a key part of the process for us.
Yeah.
And I think just knowing the numbers of, you know, there is so much power in numbers within the Latinx community. There are, this election, we're going to be the largest non-white voting bloc.
Yeah.
Basically, there's so much power there in terms of we can actually sway policy. Mm-hmm. For our communities and for those communities, their communities of color, like moving forward. And that's something that's a first in this election, that there's 32 million Latinx eligible voters. Like we say in the show, only half of those people are registered. And so it really is, I think, just about mobilizing, like the power in numbers is there. I think the desire is there in a lot of cases. I think a lot of us can see, you know, how and why it's important to vote. But I think that it's just like actually literally getting their numbers and like doing that final push.
Yeah, totally. You know, I think one thing that I really appreciated, and I know that you have some of these on your website, are there resources that you share at the end of the work of how you can find out some of this information? And I'm curious if you can share with our listeners, what are some of these resources for folks who are interested in knowing, you know, just like where their nearest polling places are, what candidates, you know, stand, you know, how they stand on certain issues? Like, where can someone go to find this information to self-educate?
Yeah, so actually a big resource right now, Voto Latino, which is our partner org, just started their election center on their website. And it actually, if you go in, you type in your address, you know, where you live, all that stuff, it gives you that information. It lets you research what's on your ballot. It tells you your polling place, tells you dates, all of that. But there's also, I mean, we found, because that's a new resource, it just began. We found some other ones, like I want to say it's Vote 411, I believe was the name of one of them. But also if you actually just Google like how or where do I vote, a bunch of resources come up, a bunch of different websites. And for most of them, it lets you just type in your address and it gives you a bunch of information. And I think just, yeah, being prepared with that research beforehand, including, you know, knowing that so many of the things on our ballots are phrased in ways that are meant to kind of throw us off and just make it very hard to understand what they actually are trying to get at with some things, just really spending the time to do that research before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think one of the ones that for me was so exciting was this quiz we found that I think it's linked on our website, where you go through all these steps of what your views are on general topics. They cover everything from women's rights, LGBT issues, healthcare, climate change, and you're just like listing what your views are on these topics. And then at the end, it'll actually tell you which candidates on not just presidential, but Senate, Congress, judicial, align with your views.
Wow.
So that way you're not even thinking of parties. You're just going off of like you as a human being, what you want to see in the world.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I think I just want to, again, amplify and lift up the point, Estefania, that you made, that it's so important. You know, you can find, you can see a ballot ahead of time. You can look at it, you can see what's on the ballot, and you can educate yourself, and you should educate yourself on, you know, I don't know how many times when I was, you know, younger voting and, you know, going and being like, I don't know any of these names. I'm just going to, you know, like SAT, you know, fill in whatever the blank type thing, do you know? And like, I realized it's so important to educate yourself what's on that ballot ahead of time. Go in when you're, you know, whether you're voting in person, whether you're voting by mail, however you're planning on vote, it's like, take the time now while we have the time to educate yourself, to read these things, to understand the legalese and how some of these are written, talk to people in your community to find out, you know, do I really understand how this is written? Do I really understand what this is supporting? And is this in line with my values, you know, ahead of time, so that when you go in to vote, you can do it confidently, that you know that you are voting not only in your best interest, but in the best interest of those that are least represented, most marginalized. And, you know, again, just like a liberation for all of us, you know?
And to your point of not getting afraid of those propositions, I know for me, that was always a really scary thing because it's a lot of legality and like words that you've never read before. And I think something I discovered right now filling out my mail-in ballot was I can go to organizations that I trust that have, you know, similar views as I do, and they'll kind of walk me through it. Like I know for me, She Se Puede is a new organization that launched by Latinas for Latinas, and they broke down my county's different propositions and saying, you know, like you have to vote yes on this one to say no on the other one, and like told me what would happen if I did that. So I think finding organizations, finding even colleagues and talking to your family again
yeah.
about what it is you want to see and like what these things actually mean, I think it's going to go such a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that tie to like, what does your vote actually do? Is really important, because I think often it's like, oh, voting, okay, well, like check some boxes, like who knows what that does. But I think just like, yeah, how it actually affects you is really key in doing that research into how it actually affects you and your communities. And I do just have to say that like the majority of eligible Latinx voters are under the age of 34,
wow.
Which means that, and you know, so many of them just came of age in time for this election. And so the kind of long-term effects of how the Latinx vote will shape this country are huge. And so I just think it's really, it's a responsibility that we have to use that and to make sure that if there's things we want to change, that we actually, you know, get out there and use our voices for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Thank you both so much for taking the time to be with us today and for your tremendous work over the past couple of years. It definitely showed. As David said at the beginning too, I think this is the best Zoom experience I've participated in the last 7 months. And it was something that I hope that we can see more of in the future. I really appreciate all of that work that you've done.
Yeah.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much.
As we are wrapping up here, how can our listeners follow you? Where can they follow you and keep up with your work?
So we have our website, www.carlasquince.com. And on there, there's like resources and just information about upcoming events. But I would actually say that the most kind of day-to-day way to follow us is through social media. I don't know if Galia, if you want to.
Yeah, so you can follow us on Facebook at Carlas Quince or on Instagram at The Voting Project. And actually, we're going to launch a really fun campaign that we would love everyone to be involved with, where we're asking everyone take photos of themselves either with or at the polls, with their ballot, filling out anything voting related.
Or their pledge. Their pledge
to vote. And tagging us, both our handle and also using our hashtags, which is hashtag voto con Carla, hashtag Carlas Quince, or hashtag the voting project.
Yes, branding. That's
yes, right? On it.
And everything you just said, we will have listed in our show description too, so people can easily just click the link.
Amazing. Thank you.
And personally, can people follow you on social media personally?
Yes, you can request to follow at GBacal, which is GBACKAL. She's a little complex, but she's there.
I guess I should mention that you can also request to follow.
You're not a ghost.
I have all the super privacy things up. Yeah, I think on Instagram it's EKF603.
Beautiful. Amazing. Thank you both so much for being here. And we will be anxiously watching with you as the election approaches.
Yes.
We are planning to have an election night party. So also if people want to come, we are definitely having a few events this month, including an election party. So
wonderful.
If any of the listeners want to join.
Yes. Wonderful. And yes, if you're listening to this when it's released, there is still time to vote, to make a plan to vote, to educate yourself. And come November 3rd, I hope you are exercising your civic duty and your civic right, those who are able and voting, either in person or at that point you have voted by mail. It's an important election to participate in and definitely make a plan.
And if you're not of legal age to vote, you can help those that are or discuss with them what you'd like to see happen in the world, just like Carla.
Yeah, love that. Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you both so much.
Thank you both.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
So great to see you.
We'll talk to you soon. Woo! Okay. Here we are. Just wrapped up our conversation. And we just like spent a few more minutes even talking with Stephanie and Galia. But yeah, wow, what an episode. But I think a really important one that we've got here.
Yeah, no, I thought it was just such a rich conversation and really, I mean, really such an important, in this year especially, but not only in this year. I think, you know, the fact that, you know, that Stephanie said about the majority of the Latinx voters are under 34, mm-hmm. and we represent such a huge block of voters. It's like, it's this year and moving forward, you know, we have such a say in policy and such a say in how we can shape the world. And we can either truly center liberation for all or not. And my hope is that we can mobilize and center true liberation for all mm-hmm. and become a group that shows up in that way for the poll, you know, at the polls.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't stop once, you know, whatever the decision becomes. I think either way, like whatever the result is of this election, of this presidential election, like there is still work to be done. And it's, and I know it becomes like so monumentous when you think about it. I think it's really important, again, just to reiterate the power of community. Like when you're in the choir, and you're holding a note, like people can drop drop in and out, and the note like continues to be sustained. Like that, I think that's the mentality we need to continue to remind ourselves of, so that way, you know, when somebody has reached the end of their candle, then somebody else can like light theirs and be ready to push forward with the work.
Absolutely, absolutely. And just that reality, this is ongoing work. This isn't just every 4 years, you know, around November, we've got to like tune into this. This is, you know, it can be fun work. It is fun to learn how you have agency, to learn that, you know, even in these messed up systems that we are part of, that we can come together to do something. You know, we have to maintain that sense of hope, and we have to recognize that this work is ongoing and continuous, and our roles in it don't just start and stop, you know, every 4 years. They're ongoing.
And being able to I don't want to say give voice to, but thinking about like the people who are not able to participate in the election, but really, really want to. Like, I have three out of my six siblings are not of voting age, and one of them turned 17 on election day.
Oh, wow.
And then I think my brother kind of misses the cutoff of like being able to vote, because he's not quite 17 and a half by that cutoff. And thinking about like what the state of the world will be for them,
yeah,
as they start to, you know, participate in this.
Absolutely. You know, I think about my sister's children, you know, they're young little kids, and I think about them and I'm like, you know, what are the decisions that we're making today that are shaping the future for them? And how are we really thinking about, as you said, those who are unable to participate, those who are without really the privilege to voice an opinion, you know, in this election especially, but in others, you know, I think that's so important, is like, how are we thinking outside of ourselves and outside solely of our immediate best interest, and recognizing the civic responsibility that we have as, you know, citizens of the world.
Right. And I love too that specifically God Bless Gainesville, like their mission was to take this to Florida, right? Florida is such like a, how are they referencing it? Like a battleground state or whatever. I don't, that's very violent language.
A cesspool.
But
I'm from Florida, so I can say that.
I will let those words come out of your mouth. I have never been. I've been listening to some other podcasts where people have brought up the issue of, I know that there was a bill that passed that was allowing people who were previously convicted of felonies to now be able to cast their votes in elections. However, they continue to be oppressed because there's these fees or something that they need to pay, but there's no way for them to find out what money they owe to the state or the government or whatever to be able to get that right back. There are nonprofits set up to pay for those fees. And I want to shout that out. I unfortunately don't have like a specific name, but I'm going to include this in the show description, that people can donate to those funds so that people can have the right to vote freely in this election, because it's just another way that like people are being suppressed.
Yeah, absolutely. Voter suppression is real, and I think, you know, there's a lot of fear going into this election about how the people might vote, and so there are a lot of ways of trying to prevent them to have their voice be involved in the conversation, and I love that. Thank you for sharing that in our show description, because I think those are important ways where those who are able can engage and be a part of helping others exercise their civic right.
Absolutely.
Wow.
As we wind down. Thank you all so much for continuing to tune into Soul Talk. We really appreciate you listening to us. Make sure that you're subscribed. Make sure that you're rating. Leave us a review. And yeah, just please get out there. Have your plan ready to vote.
Yeah. Yeah. Simple as that. Vote. Come up with a plan. Vote in person. Mail it in. Just vote. Yeah, I think this is our last episode before the election. I think we're really excited to have shared this. And I don't know if when our next episode airs, if we will even know the results of the election, but vote.
Don't worry, we will talk about it eventually.
Absolutely.
If you want to follow us, our website is www.soulproject.org. On Facebook, we are The Soul Project. Instagram and Twitter, we are @SoulProjectNYC. Thank you all for listening.